Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 253 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return this week. Formula One is back, and it was a rather interesting one from the Dutch Grand Prix. First of all though, Jamie, how are we doing, sir?
Doing well, yes. I caught the most of the race on the radio, which is fun. I actually quite enjoy a little radio commentary, to be fair, both football and F1, so I would recommend. But yeah, I was driving home from Wales as the race was going on.
You poor boy.
So yeah, I caught Harry Benjamin. Wales. Well, I think North Wales is quite nice. You're just too southern to go. So. Yeah.
Says the man weekend. Who spends most of his time in the south of France.
Not that's harsh. Okay, well, let's move on quickly from that one. Yes, but it was a good race. Lots to talk about. Was it a good race? We'll get into it.
We certainly will. I mean, first of all, it was great to have Formula One back, wasn't it?
Yes.
The summer break, I feel like we say this every year, but the summer break this year felt long.
It really did, yeah.
Like we said, I think it was a combination of having 2 weeks off after Silverstone and then two pretty boring races anyway. That we kind of got into the summer break and it felt like we hadn't had a good race since Silverstone, which was now pretty much 2 months ago, 8 weeks ago, wasn't it? Which is kind of insane. Formula One was back, though, pretty much immediately, as we were going to expect, because Lance Stroll basically spent the early part of the weekend just crashing.
Yeah, it was all looking good for Aston Martin in FP1, wasn't it? Was it P3 and 4 in FP1?
I think it was third and fourth, yeah.
And then FP2 began and Stroll crashed it in the same place that Danny Ric did a couple of years ago, and Stroll managed to not break his wrist, so that was positive for Stroll. Probably less positive for the rest of the paddock. But yeah, that was a shame for him. And then he repeated the action in, well, not exactly the same corner, but he still crashed in qualifying one as well. Almost immediately in Q1 as well.
It was on his first run in Q1, he was one of the first cars to go out there. And it was, like, I can understand, Zandvoort's an evil little track because basically all he did was in towards the, I guess it's technically the penultimate corner of the lap, he just got the outside wheels onto the grass. And of course, we like these old school circuits, it's a bit like Suzuka and obviously a few other venues as well, where you're either on the track or it's track or grass. There's no like extra runoff areas and things like that. So it really does punish the drivers. Hence why no real surprises that Lance Stroll immediately binned it. But it was quite funny just how far off the circuit he'd gone with the outside wheels, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He pretty much put half the car out there.
Yeah, complete lapse of concentration, to be honest, because he was so far beyond the grass. There wasn't like a little bit of dirt kicked up. It was like two wheels over the white line when it's grass on the outside. It's like, what is he doing? That, you know, if that's Bortoleto or Behrmann, you're like, okay, they're a rookie. Stroll's been here the best part of a decade. And he's still
that's so worrying
making errors like that.
It does feel like, yeah, Lance Stroll is the guy with 10 years experience who does still keep making the rookie errors, which is pretty painful. That would immediately mean, though, he was out in Q1. No major surprises out in Q1, was there? Our two drivers with the worst qualifying average of the year, Nico Hülkenberg and Ollie Bearman, also out. Haas, again, seemed to struggle a little bit over one lap pace here. Ocon also out in P18. And then Franco Colapinto as well, who seems to be, again, one of our... it feels like pretty much every weekend we say Colapinto, Hülkenberg, and Behrmann, and quite often Stroll, out in
and
Q1,
Ocon,
don't we? And on Ocon as well, quite a few times more recently. Not as often as the rest of them. But it feels like we end up with those quite often. Q2, though, obviously, we started to get, you know, we got a few of the bad qualifiers out of the way, and a few of the drivers that maybe struggle more, or the cars that struggle more over one lap. Q2, though, was very, very tight, wasn't it? Antonelli, yeah. Out, Tsunoda, Bortoleto, Gasly, and Albon. Albon was down in 15th, less than 0.2 off Sainz, who made it into Q3, and he was not happy about that.
No, not at all, especially because it's such a hard track to overtake on. The qualifying is really everything. So for a driver who, you know, Williams had good pace this weekend, and Albon knew that, and Albon is on not a poor run of form, but it's just the car pace hasn't been there in the last
few
races. The
whole Williams team had been more recently.
So he was very disappointed to qualify 15th, because you're thinking, unless it's a weird race, I'm not getting points from 15th at Zandvoort.
No, exactly.
But yeah.
Exactly. But by the time we got to Q3, though, what would it have been? Lando fastest FP1, FP2, FP3. Oscar fastest Q1. Lando fastest Q2. Q3 was actually very entertaining, wasn't it? Because again, where this is a circuit where there is no room for error, and both drivers knew just how important pole position was going to be. What the gap after the first runs was, what, 12 thousandths of a second in Oscar's favour?
Yeah, super tight after run one, and neither of them hooked up like full purples, did they? There's a green and a yellow in each of the laps,
I think. That was more just because obviously they were both trading little bits of time out of each other, I think, more than anything else. I don't think either of them were doing bad laps, per se. Because, I mean, even then, neither of them would improve on their second runs, but they both still ended up within a tenth of the time they did in the first run. And actually, the second time around, it was Lando that got the better of Oscar by 4 thousandths.
Yeah.
But it made no difference.
Yeah, and Piastri kind of stole that pole position away, didn't he? And it felt like it was Lando's to lose, after practice sessions finished. Piastri looked a small step back. But I think Lando would be disappointed without pole position, because he did seem to have, just that little bit of edge, almost like he did in Austria, which maybe was a little bit more of an edge back then. But yeah, I think Piastri very well to get pole position. Obviously, I saw it coming because I predicted that he would. Yep. And that was, from a track that is so hard to overtake on, you're thinking whichever McLaren's leading into turn one is probably going to win, unless something weird happens in the race.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it is one of those ones, isn't it, that I know we've spoke about it so many times before, but on quite a few of these tracks where, you know, I thought Lando honestly was going to come back after the summer break, not like absolutely wipe the floor with Oscar or anything like that, but I kind of had in my head, obviously, he dominated this race last year, that he'd kind of, you know, pick pole up by like a tenth and a half, 0.2 seconds, and just control it. But it goes to show again just how much Oscar has worked on, especially at some of these tracks where last year he was deemed to be further off of Lando. More often than not now, he's either right there and applying a lot of pressure, or, as we saw this weekend, when it matters, quicker, which is obviously how he's going to win a world championship.
Yeah, well, he'll be hoping so, won't he? And it really feels like, we were talking pre-show, that the normal tracks, Piastri seems to do slightly better, which is the way to win a world championship. You think, I'm thinking 2017, 18, maybe not 18, but certainly 17, you argue, the Mercedes was quicker at a normal racetrack, Ferrari were maybe quicker at the high downforce racetracks, because there's more of the normal ones. Lewis Hamilton had a better odds at a championship than Sebastian Vettel, just because you build a car and you want to be the stronger driver at the most common type of racetrack over the course of the season, and that's what Piastri's doing at the moment.
Yeah, exactly, and he's doing a very good job with it. Easily driver of Saturday, though, was Isaac Hadjar, wasn't it? Because it would obviously be Piastri, Norris, front row, lockout. No real surprises there. Again, McLaren just seemed to have the edge over everybody else. Verstappen did a very good effort in his final run in Q3, I believe. Did he get into the 108s? He did get into the 108s, didn't he? Just ahead of Isaac Hadjar there in a brilliant P4 effort. Admittedly, I think this was a circuit where the V-carb looked very good as well. But still, he's a rookie with half a year experience and is still getting a lot out of that car.
He probably shouldn't have been ahead of both Mercedes and both Ferraris.
He probably shouldn't have got ahead of both Mercs and both Ferraris, though. It was a fantastic lap. Russell would line up fifth ahead of both Ferraris, Leclerc ahead of Hamilton. After, to be fair, Hamilton, throughout most of the weekend prior to Q3, looked to just have the edge over Leclerc. But Charles just found something extra, got ahead of him by, I think, half a tenth in the end. Liam Lawson in P8, Carlos Sainz in 9th, and then Fernando Alonso rounding out your top 10. And that brought us then, Jamie, into race day Sunday, which, considering how excited I was, obviously, for the Grand Prix, it took me until about an hour before the race, and I suddenly remembered it was on.
Nice. it was a good start for all parties, especially those supporting Max Verstappen in the grandstands, because Piastri gets away well. Norris probably gets a better launch, but his second phase wasn't quite as good as Piastri.
And he got boxed in.
Obviously gets cut off, because why wouldn't Piastri do that? Which allowed Verstappen round the outside of turn one. Norris holds it through turn two ahead of Verstappen, and then Verstappen, what a crazy move into turn three, but fair play. That was phenomenal stuff to just absolutely send it. Well, he basically lost it and accidentally sent it, really, I think. but he got position two, so I'm not going to complain about that. And Piastri probably wouldn't complain as well, because it was one more car between himself and Lando Norris, a track, like we said, that is very hard to overtake at. I wouldn't have been surprised if Verstappen just stayed there all race, but obviously that didn't play out. But yeah, very good news for the Dutch fans in the grandstand.
No, it was. I mean, it was one of those ones as well, wasn't it, where I think, again, goes to show why... I can understand it from, on the one perspective, for Lando, of course, Max isn't your title rival. You know you've got a quicker car over a race. Max was also on a softer tyre as well, which nobody thought would survive for very long. So he's kind of like, oh, I'll give it up now a little bit and obviously come back later on. But again, it goes to show the psychology there of Max knows he can just send it around the outside of Lando. I mean, turn two, I guess it's technically turn two, isn't it? Is a corner where you can go too wide, but obviously it only really happens on lap one.
Yeah, but it's not really worth it, is it?
Yeah. I think the thing is as well, of course, especially lap one with cold tyres, everything like that, obviously you can send it to the inside of three and obviously make it work and obviously drag the car back up the banking. But it is kind of one of those ones, again, where I understand from Lando's perspective of just keep the car in one piece. But on the other hand, again, it's that whole thing of Max is willing to try it on you because he knows you'll jump out of the way a little bit more than a lot of other drivers will. And again, I've said it before and I'll keep banging on about it. It does not help Lando in the championship fight.
It doesn't, but equally, he's not against Verstappen in the championship this year. So that is the freedom that comes...
But Verstappen's still on the track.
Yes, exactly. But it's the freedom that comes from Max's perspective where you're not fighting for a championship. You can just make these bold moves and kind of
He would have done it anyway if he was in a championship fight or not.
Well, he maybe would have done it even worse. He might have run him off the track more if he was battling for a championship. But, you know, Lando was... I think he did the right thing, realistically. There's no point having an accident with the driver.
If you watch the replay, though, it was quite far ahead going into turn two.
Yeah.
Like, it was he broke very early.
For turn three, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he could probably see Max in his mirrors. He was so deep into the apex of turn three that, like, where on earth is he? Let's just keep it calm. But it didn't matter that much in the long run, to be honest, because, you know, McLaren was just too fast. So
No, I mean, by lap 10 laps, yeah, Lando had already got around the outside of him back at turn one, which, again, I was quite surprised Max didn't defend this a bit more, especially at his home Grand Prix. This is going to be my tinfoil hat moment of the episode. I think someone higher up inside Formula One has said to Max Verstappen, yeah, obviously race him when you've got a good chance, but there's no crashing into either of them.
Massive disagree on that. I don't think... I think, in fact, if an F1 higher up did say that to Max Verstappen, it would make him want to crash into them more, to be honest. So
probably
I
not
just
the right mentality, but there we are.
The McLarens, especially this track, was so ridiculously fast. You know, it could have been another Suzuka or another Imola, but Zandvoort is probably slightly easier to overtake at than those two tracks.
Would you say so?
Certainly, Imola is like the hardest track, apart from Monaco, obviously. I would say Imola is the hardest.
It's got
I think
such
Zandvoort.
The problem is with Imola, isn't it? Is the fact that the start finish straight isn't a perfectly straight line.
No,
so
exactly.
Obviously,
so
it just kind of means you can take
died down.
But it means you can also take the mick a bit with moving across the circuit and things like that to defend, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But I just think the McLaren was too fast today. And Verstappen probably just wanted to finish on the podium and have a nice day. And didn't fancy a crash with Norris. Maybe a year ago he would have done.
No, I'm sure last year he would have done. We all saw Mexico, didn't we? Still hilarious. but I mean, to be honest, it's like people have been hyping up this race, Jamie. We're gonna come out with... I think a shared, maybe slightly controversial opinion. The race, for the most part, was actually fairly boring. It was just the fact that every time something happened, it led to a safety car, which brought everybody back together. And it was kind of that old mantra, wasn't it? If safety cars breed safety cars. We were waiting for some rain early on, which I think all of us kind of envisioned a repeat of 2023. Strategy goes absolutely berserk, everything like that. Nobody even used the intermediate tyres at any point, did they? After it was predicted rain all weekend. I don't think we ever saw the intermediate tyres used.
I don't even think we saw them prepared on the cameras at any point.
No, exactly.
Which is a shame. It did spit a little bit earlier on in the race, but never enough.
But it made no difference.
To make them think about an inter.
No, exactly.
It did spit enough for Lewis Hamilton to have a crash.
Yeah.
What are you going to say about that, Matt, as our resident Hamilton fan?
It's just... The thing that saddens me so much is he came into the... Like, obviously, after Hungary, he was like, they need to bid me off, get someone else in. He came back after the summer break and seemed to be a bit rejuvenated. Like we said, seemed to be a little bit quicker than Leclerc throughout most of free practice and qualifying. Obviously, Leclerc, again, brilliant lap in Q3. I don't think Lewis would have been upset by losing out to Charles in that scenario or anything like that. But it's so rare that we see a Hamilton mistake. And all I can hope for is that just all of his Ferrari, everybody's focus is on next year now.
What's that, Leclerc win the championship?
Yeah, probably. I think, again, he's just looking... He's got to be looking at the future now. It was a really poor error, but just got a little... I think, you know, he'd already said he was struggling to keep up behind George. He couldn't get much closer. The team had told him to try and get closer, so he was trying to push on a bit more. Probably a little bit unlucky as well in the fact that was probably the wettest Turn 3 ever got, or, like, the slickest Turn 3 ever got.
19 other drivers did the Turn 3.
19 other drivers did still manage it. I'm not trying to give him excuses or anything like that. But... Yeah, just a bit painful, wasn't it, really?
I thought it was quite funny, to be honest. But,
sure you did. I'm sure you did. But, yeah, just pain. It's the only word I can use, Jamie. It's just pain.
In the words of Football Twitter, it might be time to learn Saudi.
No, not yet. Well, he is learning Saudi. That's why he's gone to Ferrari on such a ridiculous deal, isn't it?
True. But that caused our first safety car of the day, because Hamilton's Ferrari was... definitely stuck there without a wheel attached on the front right. Leclerc had pit a lap before to try and undercut Russell and I guess Hadjar as well, if it was close enough. But that obviously
that
Hamilton
screwed that over.
It, messed up Leclerc's strategy quite a lot. And safety car's out. Everyone pits. Obviously, safety car within pit windows ruins strategies, as we've said many times in this podcast.
They certainly do.
And yeah, so everyone's on the same age tyres, same pit stop lap, same compound, there's no variation, and now you've got a Watchton procession to the end. Fantastic. But
do
two
we
people
think
go on.
They should ban pit stops under safety cars again.
No. Absolutely not. I mean, Fabio Briatore might say yes, but Pierre Gasly winning the next race if they bring that law in, I'll tell you what. Two people who weren't processioning to the end. Liam Lawson, Carlos Sainz, on the restart, having a bit of a handbags moment, wasn't it? Both of them just refusing to, give each other space.
Yield,
and then,
I think, to be fair, it looked more like one of them refused to give the other space than both of them.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one, I think.
Really?
I think, I don't like it, but the way the rules are applied at the moment, I'm really not surprised that Sainz got a penalty for that. For this
really?
Turn 1 crash. Because Sainz had so much space on the left-hand side that he could have backed out into. He was not alongside at the point of contact enough for space. He should really be backing out of that based on 2025 FIA rules.
It just kills the... But this is the bigger problem, isn't it, again? That just how shocking the racing rules are. Let Jamie and I come in and rewrite the rule book, because we would fix wheel-to-wheel racing in
the sport. Thing is, what I actually feel a bit sorry for Liam Lawson for is he did leave space. There was more than enough of a car's width on the left-hand side. Sainz just didn't use it. He just resolutely stuck to his line. So Lawson still left, I don't know, almost two car widths on the left-hand side. And Sainz just hasn't backed out. And Lawson's well ahead. Yeah, I feel a bit for Liam Lawson. I'm not surprised that Sainz got a penalty. But it was unfortunate. And obviously the radio messaging was quite amusing afterwards from Carlos Sainz as well. Yeah, it's a shame that the rules have come to this because, you know, Sainz was just about alongside enough, but it was a front wing into a left rear, wasn't it? So by what is considered alongside, Sainz wasn't at the point of contact.
Yeah. I can understand your rationale. I still think it's, again, just how stupid these rules are.
I probably would have gone no racing. You know, they're both basically out of the race. There's no point applying a penalty at this point.
Yeah.
If I was a steward personally, but yeah. I don't think that's happening soon.
We did have one more controversial overtake, didn't we? Charles Leclerc ran the outside at 11 and 12. I don't think we've ever really seen many moves there.
I did that in AOR once. There you go.
What, Zanvort? When was Zanvort on? Wait, you were still in AOR in like F1
just about. 2020. I think I did one season in F1 2020.
Dear me.
Overtook someone on old hards, and I was on new softs. So it was a great move.
But I mean, it was a great move by Charles Leclerc, except for the fact that he went completely off the circuit to make it happen. But you were kind of there going. He was fought like he was fully alongside. He kind of deserved. It was very weird, wasn't it?
He didn't have a choice, really. Like,
no,
he was easily alongside enough. Russell has not left him space, and he's had no choice but to kind of jump the curve on the inside. So, if anything, I think George Russell probably was more at fault for that because he didn't leave any room for Charles Leclerc. No. But it's such a tight corner that it's quite hard to leave room
for another
car.
And especially the way it's cambered as well. It kind of drags the car into the apex.
And you really can't, like, the right-hand side of the right-hander, that massive sausage curve, you really can't hop that at all because you're just going to go flying into the grandstands. So, yeah, I'm quite glad that the FIA left that to play on. And
it
was a lovely little overtake.
It was hilarious, though, the fact Leclerc went on the radio. I don't know if you saw this on the radio, on the obviously radio broadcast. But Leclerc came on the radio and basically said, Russell left me no room. He's got no right to complain. And they immediately cut to Russell going, he went completely off the track to make it happen.
Yeah. That was so orchestrated. I love it. It's like the theatre drama on the radio. But very good stuff. And fair play to Charles Leclerc. That was a fantastic move. And he was looking more towards P4, wasn't he, for Isaac Hadjar's, who was running a great race, to be fair to him.
Yeah. The race again, though, would calm down a little bit for a short period. Just as I think more drivers were umming and ahhing about whether a two-stop would be possible, Jamie and I's favourite thing would happen. Kimi Antonelli would pit on lap 52. For some reason, Ferrari decided to pit to cover him off, which I think now they're definitely going to regret doing. So Leclerc would pit one lap later. And then into turn three, Andrea Kimi Antonelli. I love the guy. I really try and back him up as best as I can. But first race after the summer break, he just decides, what's it, the quote by Roy Keane? Just going to crash into him to make me feel better.
Just to make me feel better.
Your Irish accent is hilariously bad.
Thank you.
But,
terrible stuff from Antonelli.
On the exit of turn three, just completely bins him off.
Yeah, and it was so needless. He was nowhere near alongside going to turn three. He was just like, he's on cold tyres. Now's my moment. Everyone's going to watch it. Everyone's going to think I'm awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to head to Monza next weekend and every Italian loves me.
Everyone was just... it was a terrible move. And he was just locked up, took out Leclerc, and that was a second Ferrari in the gravel in the barriers at turn three. So, yeah. And that's not the first time. He did the same thing to Max Verstappen at Austria. So, yeah, it was a little bit... What's it Martin Brundle says? Ambition.
A day late and a dollar short.
A day late and a dollar short, exactly. Yeah, not good stuff from Kimi Antonelli. And yeah, quite poor, to be honest. And he's really got to pick himself up because he's still not got a contract for 26. I don't think he will lose his seat.
No. Mercedes have basically said, without confirming, that both drivers will be in next year. He just needs to get to the end of the year now, keep his nose clean.
Stop crashing.
Stop crashing would probably help as well. And to be fair, a few times he's been unlucky in the crashes as well. You'll look at Silverstone and go, he didn't finish
that
there like all
fault,
the other rookies. But he was the only rookie that actually looked like he was going to finish.
Start getting Q3 again would be good. I don't think he's got a Q3 in a while.
No, but again, it's that horrible thing, isn't it, of with how tight the entire field is, I think George Russell is generally doing a very good job in that car. Like, Kim is never usually that far away from George. It's just quite often that that's the difference between Q2 and Q3.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But it really wasn't a good look. Since Miami, which was race
six.
He's obviously got that great podium in Canada. Other than that, he scored 1 point.
Yeah.
Which
brutal,
is not,
man.
Not great
it's
in
brutal.
A Mercedes.
No, he needs to build up ready for next year, to be honest. And I hope Mercedes is doing that as well. I think Mercedes is probably going to be a pretty good place for him still, absolutely.
He's not going to lose his job, is he?
No, but he does need to kind of... again, it's similar though, isn't it, to... Because the only real other comparisons we've got are Lance Stroll season one and Max Verstappen, for just how young he is. And both of those two as well were pretty crash prone early on. So It's not unheard of. Don't try to claim suddenly that he's not.
Was Max crash prone? How many times did Max crash in 2015?
Monaco definitely did.
Monaco was. Russia was. Was Russia? Was that
Sainz? He had a few other rogue incidents, though, as well.
There was a lot of aggression.
But then also in 2016, 2017 as well. You got to remember. In
2017
was
horrible unluckiness with reliability.
Yeah, but also
2018
was
the one that he crashed a lot.
Yeah. Oh, it was first half of 2018, wasn't it? He kept crashing into people. So there you go. Fourth season Max Verstappen against season one Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah.
There you go. It is just that thing, isn't it? I mean, he's still young. He's a bit rough around the edges. I want to keep backing him up. I know there's a couple of guys in the comments that absolutely hate me for it, but I'm going to keep doing it. I'm not going to try and defend him in that scenario. That was just hilariously over-optimistic. But yep. Again, Jamie, we describe that as a rookie mistake. Exactly the kind of mistake Lance Stroll would make.
But you had the Italian driver taking out the star Italian car.
Yeah.
A week before Monza, so that'll be fun.
Exactly. And even better than that, Hamilton's got a five-place grid drop. Charles might have a five-place grid drop. We don't know just yet.
I've got to sit in a Ferrari grandstand and pretend to support Ferrari next weekend.
You're at Monza. Every stand is a Ferrari
grandstand.
The whole place is a Ferrari grandstand.
Unfortunately, I can't cheer when Lewis Hamilton's out the race again.
No. Oh, man. Don't do it to me. But yeah, that would bring out another safety car, though. But again, like we said, right around when people might have considered pitting. So again, strategy was completely in the bin. But we did get one more final controversial moment, didn't we, Jamie? Late on in the day, 7 laps to go, Lando Norris comes over the radio saying he can smell something funny in the car. And a Mercedes, apparently it was an oil failure. Oil leak. Yeah, Lando Norris, 7 laps to go, out of the Grand Prix. Is this the controversial moment where the championship is lost? Quite possibly.
No it's not. Because all of the media, especially British media, saying, oh, he's lost 25 points. No, he hasn't. He's lost 18 points.
He lost 18, yeah. We can agree on that.
He wasn't going to overtake Piastri.
No.
Also, if you look at the narrative of the season, this is kind of a leveller for Melbourne. I know that Piastri...
That was his own mistake, though, wasn't it?
It was both their own mistakes, though, and Norris just got away with it, I think.
Yeah, but...
Norris is very unlucky to have had a DNF. Piastri's obviously had no reliability problems so far. We don't know if he might have some before the end of the season, but, yeah, this has swung the championship massively towards Piastri. I think if all is normal, if there's no more reliability or crashing, Piastri should be winning the championship from here.
It's going to go one of three ways, isn't it? Either Lando now gets completely disheartened and Oscar waltzes away with it, maybe wraps it up with like a race or two, like might wrap it up in Qatar or even Vegas. I think the least likely option is Lando absolutely comes back with a fire under his belly, racks up a few wins, gets right back in that fight towards the end of the year. Or third, Oscar takes it a little bit easy. If there's a race where it's 50-50, he sits in for P2. If he senses an opportunity to pounce somewhere, he takes it. I think if Oscar now, I believe it's if he wins two more races, he can then follow
finish
Lando
P2
home in every other race, which I don't
like
think he would be opposed to doing. It's Rosberg Hamilton, isn't it? 2016.
Yeah. Apart from Rosberg deserved to win the championship, it wasn't just reliability.
No, it was reliability completely won in that championship. But
that's
we are.
Not true.
Complete. So if Hamilton didn't have that engine failure from the lead at Malaysia, the championship would have gone to.
You don't know, do you?
No, if Hamilton hadn't had that engine failure in Malaysia, the championship would have gone to.
What
say
are you
it
forgetting?
With me, Jamie. I have three. 1, 2, 3. Lewis
Nico
Hamilton.
Rosberg. But Hamilton could have driven better at Suzuka, he could have driven better at Singapore, he could have driven
Hamilton
better at
didn't
China.
Make mistakes either, but he still would have won that championship. He's still absolutely the better.
Also,
driver.
Rosberg took it so easy after he needed P2 to the end of the year. He finished second 4 times in a row.
Jamie,
we theorised
he was going to shave his eyebrows if he needed to.
Well, we never
Which
know,
is still
do we?
My
I mean,
favourite
he
ever
is
moment
up,
on this podcast.
Where is he? He's up there behind me, so I've got to back him. But yeah, this isn't about 2016. We'll talk about 2016 another time. Lando
Norris.
I would
love still to do retro podcasts.
0 points. Very sad. I'm not that sad at all, actually. But the thing is...
I'm trying to remain slightly unbiased.
The thing is...
I was sad for my prediction.
The narrative of the season, Piastri has been better at the normal races. And yes. Norris has won a wet race, Monaco, which is the most unique race of the season.
It was Austria. Handed Silverstone. I still firmly believe had Oscar done that in Australia, wouldn't have been a penalty. It was just Lando's home race.
So all Lando has actually won is a couple of wet races. The absolute specialist racetrack of it is Austria and Hungary, where he got really lucky, and Monaco. So realistically, without a DNF, I still think Piastri would win the championship. But that's none of my business. We're just here.
No. All I hope for now is the championship isn't won by less than 18 points. I don't want this to be the excuse.
Well, because otherwise you'll have Norris fans in 10 years' time claiming that this reliability just cost him the championship, just like what you've done. So...
Yeah, but I mean, like I said, if it's won by more than 18 points, then they can't claim it.
But the thing is,
if it's won by less than 18 points, then they can claim it.
Because all Piastri needs to do is win the championship. He doesn't need to win it by 18 points, does he? So if he chooses to finish second many times because he can and wins it by 10 points, he still won the championship. Who cares?
Yeah, but then you could say that Lando, you can't give him the opportunity like Rosberg left with Hamilton.
Give him the opportunity. You win the championship and quit. Get out.
Your Oscar Piastri retires from Formula 1 at age 24.
You never know.
Well, I think I've got a pretty good idea that if he wins the championship this year,
he might go for another one.
I reckon he might just go for another one. But yeah, that obviously then brought out yet another safety car right at the end of the Grand Prix. It did leave a little bit of intrigue right at the very end. I think Pierre Gasly absolutely flopped in the final few laps because he was on like 50 lap old hard tyres for some reason against
so
everybody else on fresh softs.
As well.
Antonelli got a 10-second penalty, no, a 5-second, no, 10-second penalty for wiping out Leclerc, and then trying to get back to the pit lane, then sped, so got another 5-second penalty. It was actually looking like he was going to be all right until then Lando Norris blew up, and then obviously that bunched up the entire field. So he finished, I think it was 5th on the road, and then obviously only got classified about P16. But Oscar Piastri, though, first ever Grand Chelem, Jamie, with everything going on behind him, he just controlled it up the front.
He did.
Max obviously then got lucked into a little bit of a P2, but Isaac Hadjar, P3, everybody loved to see that.
You just told me Max Verstappen lucked into P2, but you're
not
going to
say
Isaac Hadjar.
I'm not saying Oscar lucked into P3, but everybody loved to see it still.
Hadjar did luck into P3, but everyone did.
Yeah,
I'm
not saying he didn't.
Yeah, it was great. And the photo of him breaking the trophy in celebrating with the team photo.
That might
hilarious.
Be the thumbnail for this video.
You know what? We went into the season not positive about Isaac Hadjar at all. He's probably the least hype. I didn't particularly like him because
we didn't like him either, did we? I remember.
His radio messaging in F2 was always a bit overblown and a bit ridiculous, to be honest. But he's such a funny character.
He's
a really fast driver.
Yeah. He is a great example, isn't it, again, of how we cannot. Although I say that again,
he came second in F2. I just didn't like him. Yeah.
But this thing, I don't think, because everybody was so obsessed with the fact that F2 hasn't really been a great barometer, that in this one instance, there was no hype behind him despite the fact he did well in F2, again goes to show how broken F2 is.
But you know what? You look at what we did rookie ranking over the summer, didn't we? The best two rookies this year, Hadjar and Bortoleto, finished 1-2 in F2.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe we've treated F2 too harshly. Maybe it's a great barometer.
No, it's still not. Don't give F2 any kind of redemption. But yeah, absolutely love seeing that for Isaac. First Arabian driver, I believe, ever to get a Formula 1 podium.
He's French.
But he is Arab descent.
Wow.
I think he's Moroccan. I could be wrong.
That sounds about right.
I believe he is of Moroccan descent as well. But it also means that Hadjar scored more points this weekend than the second Red Bull seat has scored since Mexico last year. Which is a hilariously frustrating
stat.
Which
has had three different drivers in it.
Yeah. It's going to be Hadjar next. They're going to ruin his career now.
We'll see. We'll see. They'll be driving a bit slower car next year, so that's fine.
Probably. Russell, though, came through for fourth. Alexander Albon, we forgot to mention it, great lap one. And then somehow just finished fifth after everything, after a disappointing qualifying. Ollie Bearman from the back of the field to P6. Brilliant drive by
him. Bearman only scores points when he starts last.
He can only have a good race if he has the worst qualifying in the world. Lance Stroll as well from the back of the field to P7 ahead of Alonso. Tsunoda wrapped up 2 points. In, again, what was a quiet drive, but actually not a bad... Now that Laurent Mekies is actually giving him fair treatment to Max, he's not suddenly going to be battling for podiums or anything like that, but seems to be doing a little bit better in that second car. And then, yeah, well, Esteban Ocon as well in P10.
Yeah, exactly. And that, the strategy was actually quite weird, because what turned out to be the best strategy was to start on hards or pit onto hards before the safety car, ignore the first safety car, take the track position, wait for Esteban Ocon and Ollie Bearman to train the entire midfield up, and then another safety car comes out, everyone pits and you stay out, and then a third safety car comes out, you all pit, and then you're fine. So that's what Stroll did, that's what Bearman did. I think Albon did similar. So yeah, it was weird, and it's the sort of race that strategists are just kind of, you know, riding the storm and see what happens. But it worked out for a lot of drivers.
To be honest, yeah, it's one of those ones, isn't it, where you take a punt and it either works fantastically or you end up in P18 with everybody going, yeah, how on earth did you end up there?
Exactly.
It does segue us quite nicely into our quiz, though, Mr. 183.
Okay, here now, we go.
Now, Jamie tried to guess this quiz before the
show.
Well,
you told me there's 8 answers, so I
there
thought, well, that's got to be...
eight answers.
That's got to be name every race for a Toro Rosso, Red Bull, not Red Bull B team, that's the one. Finishes on the podium. I was like, I can do that, that's easy. But I'm a bit worried.
That? It's not your quiz, though, I'm afraid. You were close, though.
Okay.
You've got to name me every driver that has finished on the podium alongside a Red Bull B team driver.
Ooh,
there's only
good.
8 answers. You should get all of them.
Can I?
No.
Enough time is forever?
Oh, no, you're not time limited, but if you get one wrong, it's over.
Okay. Well, let's start with Piastri and Verstappen.
Correct. That's 2.
The most recent before that was Baku 21. Pierre Gasly came 3rd behind Sergio Perez and Sebastian Vettel.
Correct. That's 4. Vettel, going through this, ever since he got that first podium for them, seems to pretty much always be on the podium since.
Oh, that's a clue. Thank you.
That is a clue.
One before that was Gasly's win in Monza.
Yeah.
Which was alongside Carlos Sainz.
Correct,
and
that's 5.
And Lance Stroll.
Correct, that's 6.
Yeah, that's weird. Wow.
It's
the
always
when...
the podium we all forget that Stroll, because obviously the other two did a better job. He should have won that race.
Stroll definitely should have won that race in the pink Mercedes. Before that, Pierre Gasly got a podium in Brazil the year before,
yep,
which Verstappen... one and Sainz was behind, but neither of them are new answers, so who cares?
Nope.
Before that was Danny Kvyat in Hockenheim. Again, Verstappen 1, Vettel 2nd.
Correct.
So is it just 2 left? Is it the ones alongside Vettel?
It's just 2 left. It's the 2 alongside Vettel.
Oh,
these
gosh.
Are the 2 I thought were going to be the toughest for you.
I know that one of them was Heikki Kovalainen in the McLaren.
Correct. You've got 1 more, Jamie. Will you go 8 for 8?
It was definitely a BMW driver. I'm sure of it. It's just a question of which one. I'll go with Robert Kubica.
Correct!
There
well
we
done,
go.
Sir.
Come on.
8 out of 8. I thought this was going to be a fairly easy quiz for you. But
I'm
very
happy
well
with that.
Done.
I genuinely can picture Vettel on the podium in his Toro Rosso outfit. I knew there was a McLaren and a BMW next to him, but I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Kovalainen and obviously Hamilton had a bit of a shocker in qualifying. So
yeah.
Good quiz.
Great job.
I like that one.
Great job. Yeah, I thought that would be right up your alley as well.
No more Minardi podiums before that, was there?
No, exactly. Yeah, no, he didn't even get one, did they? In the 05.
Mark Webber and Paul Stoddart as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you should have. I should have put that in there. Who finished on the podium in that Grand Prix?
I
could have done that. You'd just be there going, Jim, you're still missing 3. And you just going, who on earth am I missing? What else we got to do, Jamie? Race rate in driver of the day predictions recap.
Yes.
I don't think we want to look at predictions anymore. I think we want to scrap that this year.
I think we will.
I think it takes up too much time in the show.
Well, let's do it real quick, because before the show... Before the race, I was 7 points clear, 45 to 38. You said Lando Norris would get pole. Incorrect. You said Lando Norris would win the race. Incorrect.
Damn it.
Oscar Piastri P2, Max Verstappen P3. So,
yep.
2 points.
I was going to get Max bang on.
2 points out of 8 for you.
Yep.
I said Oscar Piastri would get pole. Correct. 2 points. Oscar Piastri win. 2 points. I don't know why I predicted Max Verstappen second, but it happened.
You said because you thought something was going to happen to Lando.
There we go. Bang on.
I don't know. This, like, Jamie183 is the worst person in the whole world to do this kind of thing with.
Just got the gift of prophecy. What did he say?
You're going to claim your God.
Definitely not. And Charles Leclerc P3, which obviously no points. But there we go. 6 points to me. 2 points to you. Move on. That didn't take much time, did it?
I hate this sport. I mean, who predicts a Lando Norris not to finish on the podium? It now also means McLaren can only drop 9 points between now and the end of the year and still get to 1,000.
They're not getting to 1,000.
Definitely not going to happen. Race rating. I think people have honestly overhyped this one a little bit. It was still fairly boring for the most part.
The
best
bit of action.
Just carried by quite a few safety cars.
The best bit of action was the Russell Leclerc little battle for half a lap, and that was it, really. So
all the other Ferrari Mercedes battle.
Yeah, that was quite entertaining, but less enthralling, just a bit funny. I will go with a 6.
I was going to give it a 5.5.
There we go.
It was, again, another Dutch Grand Prix where people were going to now look back and go, oh, yeah, the Dutch Grand Prix, it's actually pretty decent. And they're going, it's not a Formula One track.
Get the sprinklers out.
It is a Formula One track. The cars just don't work there.
Yeah, it's another Imola.
But it's always a bit notorious for that. Driver of the day. I mean, it's easy. It's Isaac Hadjar, isn't it? Although, to be fair, Piastri did get a Grand Chelem.
I mean, Bellman went last to sixth.
Yeah, there's so many here. Like, Oscar Piastri could not have done any more if he wanted to. Isaac Hadjar, brilliant podium. Bellman, best ever result in Formula One from the back of the field.
Yep.
Albon, brilliant drive after a great lap one.
Stroll.
Yeah. He also raced. I love the fact he's back ahead of Alonso in the championship. It's so funny.
I will go for Oscar Piastri because I know you go for Hadjar.
Yeah, well, I think they both deserve it, don't they? So you've said Oscar, I'll say Isaac, which is all fair. Have we got anything else to add, Jamie?
No, I don't think we have. I think we've done very well.
I think we've rattled through everything we needed to. A massive thank you to everybody for their continued support. If you're new, make sure you leave us a like, get yourself subscribed, drop us a follow as well. On Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts. I think we're on a couple of other places. I can't quite remember. We also upload just the podcast form on YouTube as well, if that's more your fancy. We will be back hopefully later on this week. I need to talk with Jamie after the show just to work out when we're going to record our Monza preview as well. Formula One is back. I'm looking forward to it. And we will return later on this week to preview the Italian Grand Prix.